Hello, and welcome to Better Connected, a Bose series. I'm your host, Justin O'Connor. In this series, Bose welcomes special guests as they explore how to foster deeper human connections. Our guest today is no stranger to elite performance on the world stage. I'm excited to be joined by 12-time Olympic and World Championship gold medalist and athletics legend, Michael Johnson. Away from the track, Michael is the founder of Michael Johnson Performance, a company that provides coaching, consulting, and mentoring to professional and youth athletes around the world. I'm excited to introduce Michael Johnson. Hi, Michael. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today. It's great to see you.
Yeah, it's great to see you as well.
So many of our viewers may recognize you from your very memorable performance at the 96 Olympics in Atlanta, where you won gold in both 200 meter and 400 meter. But let's go back a little further than that even. Where did your passion for athletics begin?
Growing up as a kid, I was just played all kinds of sports, football, basketball. Couldn't avoid football in Texas, growing up in Texas. But basketball, baseball, soccer, and then of course track. And I just love playing sports, love competing. But running, you know, sprinting was always just the one thing that made me, you know, just really feel, you know, different than any other sport. I just had a skill for it. I was good at it, which helps. But I just always loved sprinting. And so ultimately, you know, stop playing all of the other sports just to focus on track.
Was there a moment where you're like, oh man, I'm fast?
I knew I was fast from the very beginning because all of my siblings, I have four older siblings, they're all much older than me, but I was faster than they were. I knew I was fast from the very beginning, you know, where that would take me. Yeah, you know, I wasn't sure of that, wasn't even thinking about that at the time, just out, you know, having fun as kids, you know, just challenging anybody who would accept to a race, you know.
And as you were coming up in your athletic career, what was the support system like you had with coaches and your community? And how has that advised you now as a coach?
Yeah, it's interesting because the support was minimal. When it comes to what we traditionally look at now as, you know, coaches and therapists and family and parents, my parents were, you know, like, hey, you know, get out of the house, go play a sport, you know, have fun, just come back home. You know, they weren't involved, you know, in getting me on teams and that sort of thing. We didn't have access to that. But what was great was it was just a bunch of kids always outside organizing our own sports. We were the coaches, we were the athletes, we had to be the referee, we had to do it all ourselves. And it was a really interesting experience. But as I got older, you know, I ran track at my high school, and you know, the support was pretty good. But it wasn't until I got into university, when I got a scholarship to Baylor University and started to compete there and got access to some of the best coaching and training, that I was able to start to really realize my potential.
So did you find, particularly going from an environment where you didn't have a lot of coaching to then having world-class coaching, that really highlighted the importance of coaching for you?
No, absolutely. I went from having very little coaching in high school to my first year of university, having, you know, the best coaching available. My coach, Clyde Hart at Baylor University, was my coach throughout my entire professional career, and it made all of the difference in the world. I didn't know exactly what my potential was prior to, you know, that sort of access to that level of coaching. Once I got access to that level of coaching and got into a you know, an effective training program that brought the best out of me, I then started to see that what I'm truly capable of.
And what are some of the things you took from that experience into now your coaching career?
Yeah, so as an athlete being coached, you know, I was very fortunate. Many athletes will go through a few coaches before you find that coach-athlete relationship that truly works, because that relationship between coach and athlete is incredibly important. It goes beyond just the technical aspects of what that coach knows about the sport or the event, but that coach's ability to communicate effectively with that athlete, meet the athlete where they are, understand that athlete, and be somewhat of a psychologist to understand, okay, what sort of moves this athlete, what inspires them, what motivates them, what do they respond best to, and what do they not respond well to? And then crafting a coaching approach to that athlete around those things.
So if we fast forward to today, you're running Michael Johnson Performance, and your organization trains professional and youth athletes. We all went through a lot of change in 2020 and 2021 with a lot of challenges. How did the pandemic impact your organization and what you do with athletes?
And the pandemic obviously affected all of us in one way or the other, and it certainly affected us at Michael Johnson Performance as well. Our athletes, many of whom were preparing to enter the NFL at that time in the spring of 2020, many of our athletes that we support were preparing for the 2020 Olympics before they had been postponed. And those athletes found themselves unable to come into our facility and work with our coaches face-to-face. They found themselves in situations where they weren't able to actually even leave their homes in many cases and couldn't get to any training facilities. And so we were having to try to support them and coach them remotely. Fortunately, we had already developed a platform to do so, but many of the athletes that we were coaching at that time face-to-face were not accustomed to working remotely. So we had to quickly, you know, get our coaches up to speed in terms of how to actually continue to engage and support those athletes and be able to also facilitate that coach-athlete relationship that we talked about, which a lot of is based on trust and face-to-face contact, being able to then try to emulate that via, you know, video calls and conferences, and trying to get a sense from the athlete, you know, of what they have access to, how the training is going, without actually being able to see, in many cases, exactly what was happening with the trainer.
What would you say were some of the biggest challenges of maintaining that trust relationship and being able to really check in with your athletes?
I mean, obviously the athletes themselves are very, very concerned at that point. You know, you're thinking, you know, the athlete is thinking, well, I don't have access to my coach right now face-to-face, and I don't have access to a training facility that I would normally go to. But does my competitor, you know, are they getting ahead and am I falling behind? So there was that real concern with the athletes. So some of the things that we had to do was try to reassure them that, you know, even though they weren't working with us face-to-face and in the facility, that we're able to develop training programs that are still going to be effective as long as you follow the program and stay as motivated to the program as you ordinarily would. And that was, you know, getting them to believe that. You know, we have a lot of technology that we're able to use where we're able to see metrics, biometric data that comes through the platform, you know, that we use to train athletes remotely and see what's happening. So being able to encourage them, you know, and being able to reassure them that we still have eyes on the data, which is very important, even though we may not have eyes on you necessarily, we still have eyes on the data, and that's informing us, and we're able to effectively develop a program. Another huge challenge was a big part of the, you know, of the job of a good coach is to motivate the athlete every day. So trying to get them and keep them motivated when they're feeling automatically as an athlete that, well, I'm training, but I'm not training as good as I could be. You know, not to focus on that distraction and not feed that distraction, but to actually focus on what you can do here and what may be lost if you're not as engaged as you could be. Trying to do that remotely was a huge challenge. So our coaches and our team had to get, you know, pretty creative in terms of how we keep the team, keep the athletes motivated.
So without revealing anything special about what your team does, what were some of the tricks you came up with? What were some of the techniques you came up with to keep that connection and to build that trust and motivation?
We encouraged our coaches to, you know, take what they knew about those athletes and use that, you know, in your personal things that they know about the athlete. If an athlete has a family, you know, getting the kids, that's, I mean, some of our coaches got the kids involved, you know, because we do train kids too. So we've got professional athletes and we could get their kids involved in the training. We did that. I think, you know, some of our coaches spent time with those athletes, the athletes they were coaching, out of a coaching scenario. Just, hey, let's just have a, you know, sort of a happy hour, you know, just kind of, you know, unplug, not talk about training, just, you know, to connect, you know, sort of off hours, so to speak, with the athletes. We encouraged our coaches to be very creative in terms of how they engaged with the athletes in order to make sure that that connection remained strong and to make sure that that engagement remained strong as well.
So you touched on a couple of key things there, staying connected and engagement. And a lot of our audience are not high performing athletes, but have faced the same challenges over the last, you know, chunk of time of the pandemic. What role did you see technology play in that part of what you do, that connection and engagement?
Yeah, obviously we are all starting to then have to rely much more on technology than we're used to. And I think that in many cases, you know, you saw people sort of who had been resistant to technology, reluctant, you know, to engage with different technological advances. Fortunately for, you know, our coaches, you know, we've always embraced technology and encouraged them to do so. We use a lot of technology with regard to how we actually train athletes, which has made the coach's job a lot better. A lot easier and a lot more effective. It takes a lot of the guesswork out of it when you can actually leverage the data. Technology was critical during that time. And it was, you know, I think most of us recognized from the very beginning, you know, how much, I think maybe some of us actually didn't realize how much we had already been, you know, leveraging and relying on the technology until it became something that, you know, we couldn't really even do our jobs without it.
So it sounds like, as you mentioned, you were already using it, you just didn't recognize maybe how much, but you also made some pivots, like you said, to use the technology differently. Are there other examples of that?
Certainly, we've always embraced technology. I think we took it for granted a little bit, you know, and certainly coming from a world where, you know, the ideal scenario is still very much to be in front of the athlete. That's not always possible. And we've already started to leverage technology for those scenarios where it's not possible for the athlete to be with us. During this situation where in-person wasn't possible at all, I think, yeah, you know, many of us started to recognize that, wow, you know, we've been using this technology in the past as a bit of a luxury, but now it's absolutely a necessity.
So we have people in our audience probably who do work in a team environment or who even lead teams, and they probably have seen or experienced a drop in motivation either individually or amongst the team that they maybe lead. What would you say are some of the key points to motivation when everything's remote?
Yeah, so that was, and that's certainly was my position, leading our entire team of coaches and therapists and doctors and our sales team, marketing team, everyone. I said to our team from the very beginning, look, you know, we may have, let's look for some opportunities here, and sort of equated it to, you know, some of the challenges I had as an athlete. And I think that they were really motivated by the opportunity for us as an organization to reach more athletes if we can coach them remotely. So our coaches certainly want to reach more athletes. Our coaches, you know, really got into, you know, as I mentioned before, trying to figure out ways to engage those athletes in a different way. But I think that, yeah, at the end of the day, it was a real opportunity for us. And that was how we kept ourselves motivated. So being able to talk about and adjust, you know, based on, you know, and update ourselves on, okay, how is this helping us to achieve our goal? Those sorts of things, you know, were able to help keep our team motivated and inspired. But certainly, you know, also getting back to our mission, which is to help these athletes achieve their goals.
So for motivation, let's pivot a little bit to trust. I imagine that building trust with your athletes is a big part of what you do. How do you establish that and maintain it when you can't be with someone face to face?
Yeah, I think, you know, for the athletes that we already had an established relationship with, you know, it was you know, not too difficult because they already trusted us and we were all they had. But it was very, very challenging for us to establish that level of trust with new athletes that we had never coached before, never met before. And especially, you know, in a situation where our team is used to having that initial face-to-face conference to get to know that person and establish that relationship. And there's a lot about that that is sometimes nonverbal. You know, you get to see the athlete in action. You get to see their demeanor when they first walk through the door, and you're taking in all of that information to try to figure out how you then bridge the gap between, you know, yourself and that athlete, given that you don't know one another yet. Doing that virtually through video was very, very challenging.
And so I would imagine that through the pandemic experience with uncertainty, and you even mentioned, you know, being kind of fearful about, am I going to have this Olympic trial? Am I going to make the team? And all that uncertainty as well with the trust relationship, but still being remote. Were you able to assess like where your athletes were emotionally? Were you able to see signs of them struggling?
I think from my perspective, the assumption was always that, you know, there's no way that, you know, our team or our athletes are going to get through this time without this being incredibly difficult on them mentally and emotionally. And we've got to make sure that we do something to support them through that.
If you could go back to pre-pandemic Michael Johnson and pre-pandemic Michael Johnson performance and give yourselves advice or tips, what have you learned? What might you tell yourself?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think that what I would have told myself and certainly would have told my team was, you know, we need to be figuring out beforehand, you know, how we keep that engagement level, because that is the biggest challenge. We talked about trust and establishing trust with new people and new relationships. And it took us a little bit of time to learn some best practices around that. And some, just like with anything else, there's always a bit of trial and error. We could have avoided some of the error part of that equation. you know, had we known this was coming and we'd have had some time to prepare. But overall, I think, you know, we were in good position and we were able to navigate it fairly well.
You mentioned that athletes like certainty. We know that in some of your, when you've done commentary, you've talked about the importance of kind of just adapting to the environment because so much is outside of an athlete's control. Talk to us a little bit about that, adapting to the environment and the importance of that for an athlete.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I think, you know, in terms of when I am working with any athlete from a coaching standpoint, you know, what I try to help them with is the mental aspect of sports. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen, you know, and athletes do like myself included. I like certainty. I like being in control of all of the things that I can be or that I can control. The key is understanding, okay, what can I control? And yes, if I can control it as best I possibly can. And some people might call that a bit of control freak, which is fine. I'll take it. But knowing what you can't control and being able to let that go and being adaptable in those instances is the key.
I think there's some really important advice for all of us in there. And there's so much that comes up that we don't like it this way. We don't want it to be this way. And I think if I heard you correctly, you have to reserve some energy to accept that, but not pour all of your energy into being impacted by it.
Exactly, because it becomes a distraction. And distractions are obviously, you know, a huge negative when you're trying to accomplish something, especially something as difficult as, you know, winning a gold medal, you know, going out there and performing at a high level, whatever it might be. So, yeah, so the main thing there from my perspective and the lesson is, you know, yeah, control the things that you can control. We all want that, certainly in those high pressure moments to perform, but reserve some flexibility as well to be able to pivot and say, okay, you know, that wasn't what I expected, but that's the way it is now. And doesn't change, the goal, doesn't change what I'm trying to accomplish, doesn't change how well I'm prepared to go in here and perform. And it certainly, certainly doesn't change the race in this case.
Right. I think this is really powerful advice. On the subject of things not being the way you're used to, and again, talking about the fact that you do commentary for competitions. These Tokyo Games, you were doing commentary, but I imagine it was a much different experience than it's been in the past.
A completely different experience doing the commentary for the 2020 Olympics that happened in 2021. we were doing it remotely, which was very, very difficult. My job is to help build up a race. You know, this is what we're about to see. This is that, you know, and build up that excitement for a big race. It's hard for me as a pundit, if I'm not, you know, in the stadium feeling it, to get excited myself, let alone, you know, provide that sort of insight or that sort of feeling to the viewer.
So you're doing story building to make that event, that race, come alive for the viewer. Were you and the production team able to adapt to the situation to still be able to provide some of that, even though you didn't have that experience of being in it?
We had to rely on, you know, our own camera crew that we did have there, but we didn't have as many camera views. We didn't have as much control over the video feed that was coming in to us, that was being controlled by someone else. So we were having to, you know, rely on our own camera crew to move around much more than they ordinarily would. We were having to feed information to them as to where to go and what to watch for, so that they could feed that video back to us that we needed. But then also having to, you know, I was having to talk to people, you know, and text messages and, you know, and things like that, and phone calls that were on the ground. So I'm, you know, literally while on air, you know, in many cases, you know, while we're not physically on air yet, but while we're doing our show, you know, having to get on the phone and talk to people and have them report to me what's happening, so that I can, you know, get some additional insight that I can provide to viewers. So yeah, there was a lot that we were having to do to try to provide the same sort of experience, given that we didn't have access to what we ordinarily would.
Yeah, again, it's about adapting and finding opportunities, which is something that you've been talking about a lot to us today. So what do you see as the future for coaching athletes virtually, and what might be some critical elements to making that successful?
Yeah, I mean, now you're talking about what I spend all of my days working on. You know, the future of coaching remotely is growing. It's not going away. I mean, we have a presence in so many different countries around the world. We have a global brand that's recognized around the world. People want access to our training with thought leaders in that space as well, and they want access to that, but we can't, you know, fly coaches around the globe, and they can't always come to us. So we have to continue to figure out how to be most effective in this. And it is my objective to be able to provide that same level of coaching, the same effectiveness of the coaching, and not an inferior level of coaching, because it's remotely. Right now, the whole system to be able to support that athlete or that individual is very fragmented, because you would be using, you know, one platform to leverage all of the data from the athlete, the biometric data that you need. You may be using another platform to be able to then provide the training program to the athlete. And then you may be using another platform to be able to then have a one-to-one conversation, whether it be audio or video, you know, with that athlete and communicate with them. So it's very fragmented at the moment, which makes it very difficult. But ultimately, I think what it will take to be able to make that process seamless and much more effective is having all of those pieces in one platform, in one place.
So that's what you and your role, that's what's keeping you up at night, so to speak, is how to make that possible, or how to deal with it until it's possible.
Yeah, how to make it much more effective, given all of the fragmented pieces now, but also how to ultimately pull all of those things together into one platform so that it is no longer so fragmented, but also to get the technology to learn some of those things that, you know, a coach automatically knows how to do because of that human connection, being able to systematize that, you know, and provide that into artificial intelligence or machine learning, you know, so that or whatever new technology we may be able to leverage out there to be able to mimic that.
Right. And so is that something you're looking at going forward, is that access, that democratization of coaching for athletes anywhere?
Not only for athletes anywhere, but also for fitness consumers anywhere. You know, those people who are struggling to, you know, your doctor told you the last three times you visited that you really need to get on a fitness regime and you're just struggling mentally to get there. It's not that you have any physical, you know, barriers to doing it, just, you know, picking kids up from school, grocery shopping, job, you know, all of these things. And you're like, and now I got to try to fit in fitness. And I really don't like doing that, you know, but I know I need to. Well, trying to help those people, you know, from an engagement standpoint, it's access to that coaching that provides the motivation and the inspiration and personalizes it for that individual so that they're seeing results, which provides them a motivation as well.
And on that topic of like personalizing it and all this technology just facilitates the connection. Really, ultimately, it's about the coach and the person being coached. So what are the key elements? What makes a good coach?
Yeah, so for one thing, you know, one of the primary things that makes a good coach is someone who understands that there's more than one way to get to success with an athlete or with a fitness consumer. It's more than one way. Everyone's motivated different. Everyone's, you know, inspired by different things, and understanding that it's important for coaches to understand that different people learn differently. What's their learning style? Are they more visual? What do they respond to better? Do they respond to more, you know, compassion? Or do they respond more to, you know, push me hard, you know, drill sergeant style? Whatever you're coaching, whether it's, you know, sports performance or, you know, whatever it might be, all of the technical aspects of that, of course, you need to know what you're doing, because you need to sound like you know what you're doing, and you need to actually be able to demonstrate that you know what you're doing, because that's the first step to establish that relationship, that trust.
Yeah, again, that's another thing that's good advice for anybody, not just in the sporting world, but to kind of bring this to a close and focus on motivating people remotely, talking to our audience, most of them, again, not high performance athletes, what are maybe you think the biggest lessons from the sporting world that the rest of us can take about motivating ourselves and motivating others, especially through remote connection?
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly whether it's sports or anything else, you know, knowing what motivates you, what gets you going, what inspires you. Like, I always knew that I was motivated by my goals. That didn't stop after I stopped winning gold medals and breaking records. You know, once I, you know, transitioned into my business career, the same thing still motivates me every day. You know, waking up in the morning, chasing a goal. I know that about myself. So I know that having goals are important for me and that I take them very seriously. I think understanding yourself as a person as well, and sort of, you know, what are your fears? You know, what scares you? You know, what sort of things make you react, and why do you react that way? Those are things that I'm still trying to figure out about myself. With working remotely, you know, one of the things that I think is super important is knowing how you work best, how you get the best from yourself from a work standpoint. Some people still need, you know, they need to be around other people, having more. Even if you're not able to get in to be around other people, having more, you know, conferences and calls and, you know, and video conferences with people. Another thing, too, is creating boundaries. People working from home. If you're working remotely, you're probably working from home. The office creates a lot of structure and boundaries for people that if you don't have those, you may find yourself a little bit lost. I've always worked from home. I know little things. Like my wife always says to me, I don't understand why you get up in the morning and you feel like you absolutely have to get dressed and put on shoes and you're still in the house. Makes me feel like I'm going somewhere. You know, I'm going to my office down the hall, but that's it's an important little thing. I have my set time that I come out of my office. I will not stay in here any longer than that unless it's absolutely necessary. And I'll probably take my shoes off, you know, at that point, you know, and it's just those sorts of differences that I know about myself that help me. And then creating the type of environment, if you're the kind of person that, you know, you need a clean sort of sterile environment in order to work and focus, and being in an office creates that for you because everybody is around and you don't want them to see that your office is a mess, you know, or that someone comes in and cleans it up every night. Well, then if that's how you work best, then you need to make sure you do that at home, you know, because otherwise you're going to find yourself a little bit lost.
Well, Michael, I think that really put a great end to the conversation. I think I've taken a lot personally from this conversation, and so I believe our audience probably has, and I can't thank you enough for sharing some great wisdom with all of us.
Oh, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us today, Michael, and to all of our viewers around the globe. This has been Better Connected with Bose, and I've been your host, Justin O'Connor. I look forward to seeing you next time.